Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 265. Today's extravaganza is a breakdown of the 2013 NFL draft. And frankly, it's one that is one of the weirdest NFL drafts of our lifetimes here. It's going to take a panel such as the one that we have today to be able to break it all down for you. We have original FDH Lounge dignitary Jason Jones, the FDH senior editor and the man who is in charge of our NFL draft coverage from our rankings on down. FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, and a good friend of ours, FDH Lounge dignitary and the proprietor of the First Down Scouting, the scout Ken Bex, joining us here today. We have on the phone lines first good friend Jason Jones, who I know has been ready and waiting and getting ready for this discussion for a good long period of time now, and it is going to be a fun one as we break this down. Jason, how you doing today, my friend? Jason? We're working to get Jason on the phone line here. Okay, he has apparently dropped. We will get him back on the line, uno momento. Really looking forward to discussing with our panel of FDH Lounge dignitaries today this NFL draft. It's not an exciting one, to be honest with you. No skill position players who are in great demand. And, yes, that includes quarterbacks. Geno Smith of West Virginia is what passes for a highly sought-after quarterback at this point. Again, not compared to most years. So no real great skill position players. As CBS Sports has pointed out, this is very possibly going to be, maybe more likely than not, the first NFL draft in 60 years without a Big Ten player going in the first round. Jonathan Hankins from Ohio State represents the best and maybe only possibility for the Big Ten to crack the first round. That's kind of a fluke more so than anything else. It's really kind of a cyclical thing, but the Big Ten can't be too happy about that. Again, more than anything else, it's the lack of skill position players and the lack of players considered franchise players that in this draft. It really kind of sets it apart. There should be excellent draft. You can build the nucleus of a strong team in this draft, but beyond that, it's very, very hard to tell what is going to transpire, how this is going to shake out. It is going to be very, very unpredictable to see how things go. First, we have FDH Lounge dignitary Jason Jones joining us here. Jason, how you doing, my friend?
Pretty good.
Good to have you on the phone lines. And we have on the phone lines here, trying to pick up the what number this is I'm looking at. It's either FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway or the scout Ken Bex of First Down Scouting. A Russian roulette here, so to speak. So it's either Chris or Ken. How you doing, buddy? All right, getting them on the phone here. Chris or Ken, welcome to the program. Don't know which of you guys I got.
Hey, this is the scout. This is Ken. How you doing?
Scout, how you doing, my friend? Good to have you on. Wasn't sure which number I was looking at there. So, all right, we'll get this thing started, and we'll patch in Galloway once he is able to join us. Let's just start from a general overview perspective here. I laid it out that, again, that almost a complete dearth of skill position players in demand. Not too many players, and even in the trenches, that are considered franchise players, although there are some at least. A draft that's going to be more noted for depth, really, than absolute can't-miss franchise players at the top. Jason, start with you. Overall thoughts on this year's draft proceedings?
Well, it looks like the bulk of the safe picks and the long-term franchise players would be found in the trenches. And of course, Ken can speak more to the length and depth of this thing, but I'm most excited about some of the guys that have issues or question marks that, had they not had those question marks, would probably be up at the top. The offensive line, defensive line, you're going to hear a lot about, and even some of the hybrid linebacker types. And it seems to me that there's at least one or two guys at every position that's exciting, but only time will tell.
Yeah, there are that. And you talk about the question marks, you talk about all of that. I want to point out to everybody that 2013 Pro Football Draftology, you can, of course, access this show from the cover by clicking the link if you're checking it out online as a PDF. In that guide, we've got all of our draft rankings, all of Jason's fine content. I want to point out also, too, that one of the things that Jason has in there is a team of players who, position by position, who should be going higher were it not for injury or character question marks or the like. That, among all the other features, is definitely worth checking out. Scout, as you're checking this thing out this year, again, I know your focus a lot of times is on under-the-radar players, the guys who in the middle and late rounds can help you build the cheap nucleus of a championship team. It really seems like there's going to be more focus probably on the middle rounds this year than most anyways because of the lack of headline players at the top. But what are you looking at? What goes through your mind when you assess the 2013 NFL draft?
You know, if I had an NFL team, I would say to myself, there ain't enough draft picks for the number of quality players that's out in this draft this year. I mean, you know, if you're in the top 10, I would definitely try, unless there's one guy you absolutely love. I mean, this is the one of the kind of drafts, I'm sure Jason can talk on this too more, is the quality of depth is unprecedented to me. I mean, you can go into the second round and find a guy, you know, just as good in the top 15 if you know what you're doing. Drop into the third, fourth round, I mean, you can get guys that can start day one. So I'm really going to be curious to see what comes out of, like, round two and through, because this is one of those kind of drafts where you can really hit on some nuggets.
Ken, let me follow up on that here for a second, because there's a lot of people like myself that are looking at the San Francisco 49ers who came very close this past year as the Super Bowl favorites for next year. I certainly subscribe to that, as I said. They're an organization that is poised. They have a lot of picks in this year's draft. They were ready for this thing. They loaded up accordingly. Is this the kind of thing that can take an organization like San Francisco that's already right there, very few weaknesses to the naked eye, and get the kind of depth that could sustain them for many years to come?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, they can go about this one or two ways. You know, they can maybe trade some of those picks, you know, move up and get, you know, spotlight some guys they really want to, you know, plug-and-play type guys. Or they can, you know, go, like you said, with the depth thing and still get quality guys. So I don't see, you know, if you look at their track record over the last couple of years since Harbaugh has been there, along with the front office, you know, I'll tell you what, they're definitely in the top, you know, tier when it comes to not only getting good guys but good value guys. And that's what it gets back to. You know, you can get good guys in the first round, second round, but are you getting good value? And that's where I'll say, you know, them along with the Ravens, you know, New England, they're pretty good. But you got the same teams year after year. You know, Steelers, they're pretty decent. They've been dropping off a little bit too. But, I mean, it comes down to that front office, and I think it really comes down to the communication thing. Is everybody, you know, on the same boat here? You know, what's the system you're looking for? Let's peg these guys and be true to your board, you know. I mean, you don't want to go jumping up for guys, you know, hastily, and then you're going to go out of the value system thing again. So, you know, those good teams like that, you know, they must do their due diligence when it comes to looking at these guys. And I think they really stick to their board, you know, wait till the guys fall to them. Let's say if they're in the third round, they see four or five guys, you know, with a third round value, but they know they might have something coming in the fourth round. They still got something there. They might trade out of there, still get one of those guys, and hope they might, you know, drop to the fifth round. So these are the types of things, you know, those kind of organizations do. And I'm hoping, you know, that the Browns get into that mindset.
Oh, certainly. You gotta hope so. Even if the hiring of Mike Lombardi doesn't necessarily do much along those lines. Yeah, it is an opportunity for the rich to get richer as far as the successful organizations. And like we said, San Francisco having stockpiled and hoarded picks as much as they did in this year's draft. In looking at this, Jason, you talk about value. And, of course, that's a concept that we at FDH are always obsessed with, as we are in fantasy sports as well, because that's how you win championships. It seems to me never has the concept of value, and I could be wrong on this. You always tend to think that what's happening in the moment is unprecedented. It seems like never has the perception of value been as fluid up until right now. I know talking to you off air, even when you're looking at the jockeying at some of the top offensive line spots here, whether it be offensive tackle, offensive guard, the places in the trenches that have the most key big-time skill power in this year's draft, even as of right now, there are very active debates in draft rooms all over the NFL, it seems like. Is it this guy or is it this guy? Is it this guy or is it this guy? The debates have got to be fascinating. You'd love to be a fly on the wall, I would think.
Well, yeah, specifically with offensive tackle, because it looks like there'll be two of those in the top five. The question is, are you excited or even content about the idea that Luke Jokel is as advertised? You're getting exactly what you expect. Or do you like the fact that Eric Fisher looks like he's got a lot higher ceiling, a little bit more athletic, and has good balance? I mean, there's a lot of things there to decide. Do you just take the guy that you know you can plug and play, or do you take the guy you think can grow into an even better player? There's some questions there at guard. I've heard from a lot of different people that they like Cooper better than Warmack, and up until a week ago, everyone would have told you that Warmack was the Castro of this draft. So there's definitely some questions there on tackle. You can see some guys like Fluker that are moving up the board, because there are teams that need tackle, specifically right tackle, and they know that the big three are going to be gone inside the top 10. So there's some movement on offensive line. I really like defensive line, to be honest with you. I don't know that defensive end is as sexy as everyone thought it was a month ago. But the defensive tackles look nice. Not to say that there aren't holes, but I would say at least the top four will probably go very early. And produce. So I mean, there's definitely some trench appeal in this draft.
There definitely is. And Scout, when you're going through and you're looking at it, again, as you referenced, just about unprecedented depth here and options to upgrade later in the draft if you're missing on some of the key guys at the top, how does that affect the teams, do you think, as they're preparing for this year's draft, the knowledge that if you miss a Jokel or a Fisher, you can still get somebody lower down in here? Do you get the sense that teams are widely sharing your opinion of the depth in this draft, or I should say that they're aware of it, because I think we should all tend to believe it when you say that, but do you get the sense that that perception is widespread in the NFL right now, that there are plenty of options to upgrade later in the draft as well as earlier?
Well, yeah, I'm hearing more and more as the draft nears that a lot of them top 10 teams are trying to drop down. And so, you know, that gives you an indication that, you know, widely spread, there isn't any one franchise-type guy that pretty much any position, and, you know, I'm pretty much on the same thing. I don't see any one guy, you know, that I have to have, you know, and that doesn't matter what position you might be in need of, because the second guy that you might have on your board, the drop-off isn't so, you know, it just isn't that much of a drop. And even though, you know, if you go in the top 10, you're not going to get what the salary cap hit. You know, that's a consideration you got to look at, too, you know, past history, you go in the top five, top 10, you know, you're giving them monster contracts. So a team like Atlanta, like the Falcons, I'm hearing, want to, you know, get up into the top 10 because there must be somebody that they have that they're wanting to put on their team because, you know, they're making a Super Bowl run. They don't mind maybe, you know, giving up a second, third, or whatever to move up to get in that top five if there's somebody they really want. And so I think it all depends on where you're at, where your franchise is. And are you making that Super Bowl run? Because, you know, and you, like I said, you don't have to give as much up right now with the cap and everything. So, you know, it all depends on how your franchise is thinking, where you're at and everything like that. But like you were talking about the value. I mean, that's what I'm all based on. You know, whenever I'm in the draft talking about a prospect, it's all about value, because ultimately that's what is going to come down to, wins and losses come Sunday.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to get the best players you can as low as you can possibly get them. Along those lines, I got a follow-up for you on something me and Jason were talking about off-air. You talk about the Falcons trying to make a Super Bowl run. We were bouncing a scenario yesterday here with the notion that they might be interested in Tyler Eifert to take the torch from Tony Gonzalez. How about that? The ability to have that kind of continuity plus 1 year, being able to simulate the whole Hernandez and Gronkowski thing that New England has got going on, that sounds right there like the epitome of a move that you make when you think you're on the cusp of a Super Bowl.
Well, I'll tell you what, whoever comes away with Tyler Eifert, you know, as long as they utilize him properly, I'm going to tell you, that's a wide receiver in a tight end's body. I mean, I love that guy right there. I mean, no question about it. I mean, I'm salivating for that guy. I mean, if you can get him anywhere from, let's say, 15 and down, or maybe a little bit more high, 14, 15 and down, man, I'll tell you what, you better, you know, you might want to make a move on that one, because Tyler Eifert, not only, I like his catching radius, too. I mean, this guy, you know, like I said, he's like a wide receiver with his mobility, you know, his awareness on the field. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times when you're near the sidelines, you might have to stretch, do whatever you have to do. He's still got the awareness, you know, to get those feet down, tap it in, and make sure, you know, he's still in bounds. And a lot of times people overlook that kind of stuff. You know, that's something you either got given, you know, talent that shouldn't be overlooked. So all these types of things have to be looked at, especially from the tight end position. I mean, you're always looking for a guy that, you know, happens to be a tight end, but that happens to be a receiver inside a tight end. And I'm going to tell you, that guy right there fits it. I mean, he's a mismatch nightmare for any defense. And whoever gets him, I mean, he's a great hands catcher. There's nothing really about him that I don't see that I don't like. As far as the blocking goes, you know, he's good enough. And you know, this game is going more towards a passing game. So, you know, you can always find somebody to help on the blocking end of it. But when you can get a guy that can be dynamic on the field like that, and a matchup for corners, he's just too strong, linebackers too quick, I'd take him every day of the week.
Yeah, any Nelson
that
just solidifies
the opinion.
Well, exactly. I want to say, yeah, as a guy who's got Tyler Eifert in my fantasy football keeper league, I'm very happy to hear the scout endorse him like that. And, you know, for anybody that's criticizing his blocking, that's like the same Nelson nitpicker who was like, you know, Deion Sanders didn't really run up and engage the ball carrier that much. You know?
Right.
That's the same guy that would be criticizing Tyler Eifert's blocking ability. But, you know, we dog the top heaviness of this year's draft, I think, for good reason. And, again, it should be a depth-a-palooza once we get into the second round, third round, et cetera, next week. But here's what I'm looking at, and Jason, I'll start with you on this. You know, one of the things we always do at our draft guide is try to anticipate the next year. And a year ago, and that was something that I was putting together, and granted, I might look like a little bit of an idiot, but that's the way things played out. I was like, hey, next year, Matt Barkley is going to be available. Hey, Marcus Lattimore might be coming out, et cetera, et cetera. No indication whatsoever that this thing was going to look as crappy at the top as it looks like it's going to. The cyclical nature of these things leads you to believe next year is going to be better. And we've seen that with the NBA in recent years. We've had a couple of bad drafts, but they've sometimes been sandwiched around a pretty good one. So as you look at this, as you look at the reasons over the last 12 months that the perception of this thing at the top has crumbled, talk about that, because I know you've got your eye on some guys like Lattimore who really have the ability to produce now that they've been tarnished a little bit and their value might drop to a very reasonable point for a lot of teams.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was this perception that going a couple years ago with guys like Marcus Lattimore after his freshman year, even one of the guys I like a lot more than I think most people do, Derek Rogers, if I'm saying that right, when he was in Tennessee, I mean, there were some guys that looked like at this point in the progression were going to be, you know, blue chippers. And circumstance, injury, bad attitude, drug test, whatever, have created sort of a problem there. I mean, with Matt Barkley and
Ken's watched, you know, more tape than anyone I know, but I got to say that I think he might have been exposed as being maybe a system guy, or, you know, there's some holes in his throws. Now, people are claiming that he can make all the throws and he looks good, and he does, but there's some issues there with that guy. Conversely, there's some other guys that have kind of moved up that I had almost discounted until recently, like E.J. Manuel, who I'm currently in love with as far as quarterbacks you'll have to take before the third or fourth round. There's guys that can be had later, and that's what is really scary about some of those teams that Ken mentioned earlier, the San Franciscos, the New Englands, that are sitting at the back end. Because those are teams that if they have the picks and they like a guy, they're going to take them. Damn what Ken and I think may be their slotted projection level. And, you know, we saw that with New England a few years back when they took Mayo. Because I thought Mayo looked like he was a, you know, 20s on down kind of guy. New England said, you know, we got a billion picks. Don't really care. I'm going to go get them. So
me too. I thought that as well.
There are going to be guys that get taken higher than they should, at least by our perceived concept of value. And that just is a testament to teams being in a good position, knowing who they like, and saying, damn perception, we're going to get our guys and do so, you know, better than Buffalo, at least, when it comes to that sort of a thing. But as far as, like, middle of the draft on back, I think it's so murky that we're playing this game of the top is not sexy, so something's got to give, and you're going to start to see guys go that you may not be familiar with, you've never heard of, or think that they're not as good as their pick selection would dictate. And my number one example of that is Margus Hunt from SMU. I'm telling you right now, even though every draft analyst, every mock draft you've seen says late first round all the way into the end of the second round, I say if you've got the picks and you feel confident about the place in your team and you need that position, you take that son of a gun as high as 10. I don't care if you're just sick. He's tenacious.
Wow.
From everything I've seen, I've never seen the guy try to get a Sports Center highlight reel type hit. He wraps up with both hands. Point of attack is good. He's tenacious, fundamentally sound. I think he's almost like a tall, skinny J.J. Watt. I really do.
Sports Center is different. So essentially, he's the anti-Robert Griffith then. But that the days of him roaming the defensive secondary for the Browns, I think we're all still trying to forget about that. But as far as it goes here, Scott, what are your thoughts about that, about the value here? Because, again, a year ago, I'm looking at it and I'm going, you know, the Browns at all costs next year got to get Robert Woods. You know, that was before the Browns got Josh Gordon in the supplemental draft. And I'm thinking, whatever they do next year, whatever they do, whatever cost they got to pay, they got to get Robert Woods. And then, you know, he's a guy that they could, you know, they don't have a second round pick, but they could probably get him there pay if they wanted to. I mean, things change, perceptions change, and we're at this point now where it seems like there's an awful lot of good, but not a whole lot of great, which seems like the theme for this year's draft. So what are your thoughts as far as, like, the last season and how the perception basically shaped to where we are right now, that this is how this draft qualifies?
Yeah, the ebb and flow anymore. I tell you, it's like the stock market when it comes to a lot of these players and prospects. That's on a day-to-day, weekly, monthly. I mean, it's just, you know, turmoil. But, like, I go back to the same thing. You know, those organizations that are true to, like, you know, Jason was talking about, you know, if you're true to what you see, you know, you got to go by what you see on the film. And if what the film is telling you is right, then you just got to go with that. Now, if you got a bad eye, you know, buyer beware. But you have to go by what you see on that film. I'm not too much of a big combine guy. I really don't watch it anymore, to be honest with you. And there's really not much more for me. The only thing I might get verified from the combine is 40 times. just to see if what I'm seeing on the game film is, you know, matching up for the most part. But really, I don't really get into too much of like that. As far as like people like Matt Barkley, I was never really on the bandwagon with the guy. I thought he was, you know, Jason was saying, more of a system type guy. I don't see him as, you know, you can throw him in any kind of offense and he's going to take you to another level. You know, when you're talking franchise quarterback, just like a franchise running back, you know, their skills dictate that they can play whatever you need them to play. And along with Geno Smith, you know, he's got decent measurables and all that kind of good stuff, but I'm just not seeing that wow factor. You know, those plays where you go, wow, you know, that who else could have done that in the league, you know? And so at the quarterback spot, I definitely think the value is going to be, you know, pretty much in the late second or third round. You know, anybody before that, I don't think I would really touch any of these guys because, for instance, I like Mike Glennon, but once again, he's a system guy. You know, he's going to have to be more like a Bledsoe type, you know, where he's going to be in the pocket. And those kind of guys, more and more, it seems like, the offenses, you got to be able to move, you know. So if you're going to take a guy like that, you better be able to tailor your offense where you better have some bookend offensive tackles. So just like with anything else, there's going to be a give and take. If you don't have a franchise-type quarterback, then you better have a good running game. You better have the weapons around him, you know, to take him to another level or help him out. So these are the types of things you're going to have to think about if you're not going to get that franchise quarterback. You know, you're going to have a solid defense. I mean, and so Matt Barkley, I mean, you know, he really doesn't do much for me. Geno Smith, he's okay. I like him. I don't love him. Tyler Bray, I didn't get too much on him out of Tennessee. He's got good size, you know. I heard he don't have too much of the consistency you're looking for. But a guy that I like that didn't get a lot of reps and is fitting in more to where the offenses are going in the NFL is Marquise Gray out of Minnesota. Now, this guy, you know, 6'4", 240, over his collegiate career in Minnesota, they had him behind center first year and a half. Then they kind of changed head coaches, and he went more to, you know, a wide receiver type situation. Now, if a team was to get him, you know, late fifth, sixth, seventh, undrafted situation, I think you could definitely have him under some tutelage. And in a year or two, he's the kind of guy with the kind of passing skills he showed in limited snaps. And the awareness I've seen in the pocket, that's the kind of guy, you know, I would be looking at if you're going to be taking a late-round type of guy. But the quarterback position this year, definitely, especially, I'm not happy with it.
Well, another thing about. Go ahead, Jason.
Oh,
Jason, you there?
Yeah, I'm just going to piggyback that idea. You know, as a franchise, you have to really look at, you can't judge these things based on a comparative nature. You can't say that, as the quote analyst experts would say, you can't sit there and say, well, Geno Smith is number one and so down the board. You need to say, hey, Geno Smith may be number one, but where does Geno Smith rank among the grades and projections we had for the other number one quarterbacks over the last 5 years?
Yeah, there you go.
I think comparatively, you're looking at Geno Smith thinking, I don't feel so good about spending a top five pick on a guy that couldn't even be on the practice squad with
the
quarterbacks of the last 5 years. I mean, you put Geno Smith in a draft with Andrew Luck, RG3, and so on, he's probably not even a fourth-round pick.
Right. Are we even talking about him, to be honest?
Exactly. So, the quarterbacks are rough, and I like this idea of looking at the quarterback position as a potential of what can we get from the guy 2 to 3 years from now. And quit trying to believe that just because you picked a quarterback in the draft that he's got to start within the first few games. Because unless he's an Andrew Luck kind of guy, that's not going to happen. And I don't know that necessarily, unless the Buffalo's coaching staff loves Nassib that much, that there's a guy in here that's as a quarterback that's going to start right away.
Well, the thing is, though, I got to say, it's a little bit of a tougher sell to the unwashed masses when it's not just Walken Griffin that are killing it after last year, but Russell Wilson. Everybody's going to be out there going, how come you can't find the diamond in the rough that can put us in a Super Bowl right away, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have that, and that's just a sad part of the reality of a lot of the smart marks out there and the various fan bases right now. Let me throw a couple other names at you guys here. We're talking about the weakness at the skill position level here, and I'm going to throw in one other name as well. At running back Eddie Lacy, I think what might be a little bit of a concern with him, you look at Green Bay has had a dire need for a running back that they have, for whatever reason, not addressed the last couple of years, but he doesn't seem to have enough finesse in him, I don't think, to go at a spot that would seem appropriate to his value late first round there with them. That would be my concern with him. You look at Austin, wide receiver out of West Virginia. My concern with him, like DeSean Jackson, is a guy with his frame going to be able to produce consistently play in and play out, or is he just going to be good for the occasional spectacular play? And then the name that was on everybody's lips at the beginning of the year here for all the wrong reasons, Manti Te'o at safety. Again, it looks like he might be in the position to get in the last laugh if a team like New England or Baltimore or some kind of team with a good infrastructure around him can get him and put him in there, because he looks like a late first-round value at best. So, Jason, your thoughts on any of those three names?
Well, the first thing is Eddie Lacy. Everyone falls in love with a guy like this. It's Alabama. It's featured back. Mm-hmm. It's power, you know, one move and downhill. And that's great, but again, comparatively, is Eddie Lacy the same Alabama featured back as Trent Richardson? No. Plain and simple, no. I don't personally want to put him in a system where he's going to have to catch the ball a lot. I think he's one of these guys that looks sexy in college, looks less so in the NFL. Is he the number one back? Probably. If it was me, like Ken said at the top of the show, there's situations here where I look at what's available in the first round, and I say, if that's what we want, fine, but let's look at it later. I would rather take the chance on a guy like Marcus Lattimore being every bit the Adrian Peterson rehab player that he claims he is, or, you know, Giovanni Bernard from North Carolina. There's Franklin from UCLA. There's other guys that if you want to go get, fine, but you don't have to do it right away. Tavon Austin scares me to my core. I know there are teams out here like, this kid makes plays. I understand that, but you know what? There's a girl on YouTube who's like 10 who's just knifing up defenses in Pop Warner. But you know what? I wouldn't draft her in the NFL because she's small. Tavon Austin's like, what, 5'8", 140 pounds?
Yeah.
You know, what happens the first time this guy catches the ball, running the sideline, tries to make some fancy move that worked in college, and some safety cleans his clock and breaks
right
in half? So I'm worried about that, and for that reason, I wouldn't take him in the top 10. Playmaker, absolutely. If I was Houston and everything happened realistically, I'd go, hey, Tavon Austin might be a nice compliment to Andre Johnson. Problem is, you know, these things, it's like a big popularity contest mixed in with a soap opera, and now Tavon Austin is probably not going to make it out of the top 10. So it's there's some sexy appeal to it, but if you're a reasonable franchise like the Patriots, like the Steelers, like the Ravens, you're not messing around with Tavon Austin. You let somebody else make that gamble. And refresh my memory, who's the third one?
Yeah, Manti Te'o.
Te'o, I was actually really excited about, you know, regardless of the girlfriend thing, clear up until the championship game, and then you know, there's a moment's pause there when you see the inability to tackle and really not rallying the troops like you're led to believe that he's going to do. Here's the thing. I think Minnesota's in love with him. I think they like Notre Dame guys. I think they've got a hole there. And I think they're fine with his 40 time. I think he's going to be a solid player. With that being said, you know, there are guys like Ray Lewis that get picked outside of the top 10 that go on to have phenomenal careers at that same position. So Manti Te'o is going to get taken higher than he probably should. But I think that guy gets in, you know, once the locker room settles down, they quit, you know, giving him the business about the off-field stuff. I think that eventually he'll be a solid player. He'll make plays. He's not going to scare anybody with his, you know, sideline-to-sideline speed, but he'll be a solid player. He's got to give that kid a chance to get past all the BS and play football.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key. Ken, my biggest thought out of the three guys that we just talked about there, whether it be Lacey, Austin, or Tao, actually, surprisingly, my jive is not going to be about Tao, but it's going to be about Austin. I don't think I'd want to draft a guy that Ice Cube McNeil could probably beat his ass in an MMA fight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because that's one guy that I really haven't had time to evaluate like I wanted to. The little bit I've seen, he did seem like he had playmaking ability. You know, can make some things happen in tight areas, which is always important, you know, translating to the next level. But that weight thing, I think he's like 170-something. I mean,
uh-huh.
you really do have to factor that because I'm going to tell you, when the safeties are 2-plus now and the free safeties almost 2-plus, I mean, you know, you got linebackers 260. Eventually somebody's going to get a hit on them. I mean, that's just going to happen. I mean, it's the NFL. So, yeah, as far as, like, right now with Tavon Austin, just size alone, I'm not, you know, touching him anywhere near, the top 15 for sure, I wouldn't think. I mean, that boy, he better be devastating. You know, I'm sure he's not any more better than anything we haven't seen before. So, no, I'm not touching him unless you're going to do the whole offense around him. I mean, you better, you know, that's the only thing I can say. Unless you got something, you know, that you want in the smoker's jacket room and came up with an offense that's going to be tailored around a guy that's about 175, you can't afford to take him that high, you know. And so, and getting back to Eddie Lacy, and you know, I'm right there with Jason. He's good. He's a good running back, but they're the good running backs. You can get them a dime a dozen. I don't see anything about him that would make me say we have to go get him. You know, off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, second round type guy to me, you know. And then at the running back position, I mean, guys that I like lower, and I like to hear, you know, what Jason has to say about a couple of these guys. I love Rex Burkhead out of Nebraska, and I think he'd be a great guy between the tackles, you know, if you're a run-oriented type team. Sierra put out of Notre Dame. I think the sky's the limit for him. He wasn't used properly at Notre Dame. And I'm in agreement with Marcus Lattimore with him at South Carolina. I mean, if you can get this guy, let's say, in the third round, I think that's right around that little value with the injury and everything. He's worth a look at in the third round. And I think you asked about Tao. You know, I had him pegged around a second round type guy because he's consistent, but he's not an impact guy. So anytime I don't see a guy as an impact-type prospect, you're not probably going to be in the first round unless you're at a position that's hard to get. And so, you know, I think he'd be a solid inside linebacker. Like I said, you know, out of your top 11 on the defense, I think he'd be one of your upper-tier guys. But there's no way I'm in the first round. I don't feel like he's a sideline-to-sideline guy. I think he anticipates plays good, which might, you know, help with his slower 40 time. But at the NFL level, at some point you can't reach the sidelines, you know, at some point. So I like him, but I don't love him. And a couple other guys that I'm really concerned about when you're talking top 10, 15, or 20 is Deion Jordan out of Oregon. I think he's an athletic guy, but I don't see it transitioning on the field going to the next level. I think he's more athlete than true football player. And the same thing I'm thinking with Barcavis Mingo. I think he's an excellent athlete, excellent combine guy.
Thank you.
But I'm not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it on either one of them guys. And another guy is Jarvis, you know, Jones. I like him, but I don't see him as an outside guy. You know, I think ultimately they'll figure it out, and he's an inside linebacker. And I think if you get him in between them hashes, I think he can do some damage. So, you know, that's my feeling just looking at these guys on film. I got
to
hear Jason on this one.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear
somebody else. Yeah, I'm glad to hear somebody else on the planet not drinking the Kool-Aid on Mingo.
I
don't like high risers, especially late as we get closer to the draft. And my perception was, and I didn't agree with it then, that Mingo was a middle to late first round type guy in a draft that doesn't have elite outside linebackers, especially 4-3 outside linebackers. And then all of a sudden I woke up one day and everyone's talking about him in the top 10. Like, what I missed? Was there a college football season that I didn't see in the last 10 days? So Mingo I'm absolutely on board with. I do think he's athletic. I think he can technically play both 3-4 and 4-3 outside linebacker because he's got decent size. The Deion Jordan thing kind of perplexed me from the beginning because everyone made the leap that, yes, he's athletic, and yes, he can shed blockers and such sometimes. I don't know that he's necessarily grease lightning at the NFL. But the other thing is, like Kayvon Austin, this guy's got to get serious weight room time. He's got to add 20, 30 pounds to even be close to a 3-4 outside linebacker.
And you know what, Jason? When you have to do things like that, Don't you have to, like, if you got a board, you got to drop the guy's value. I mean, you have to. He's not necessarily a plug-and-play guy when you got to still put 20, 30 pounds on.
Yeah, Deion Jordan has never moved in my mock draft revisions because it seems like there's only one place he's going to go. And in my opinion, that's two to Jacksonville. And also, in my opinion, is the reason why Jacksonville perpetually sucks. Because you don't take a guy at two that has to, you know, where you have to say, here are the yeah buts. You just don't do that at two. You take a guy that goes in and produces right away. Which is what you see from some of these more elite franchises out there. You know, when Atlanta moved up to get Jones, they knew that kid was going to play right away, and they didn't have to touch his game. And that's the kind of guy you need to get. Deion Jordan's not that guy. That he may end up being a good player, but you get that guy in the, you know, in the teens and the 20s. You don't get that guy at two.
Well, see, here's what kills me, too. Okay, let's say year two he starts, you know, producing. Okay? Well, if year one he's more of a situational guy, by year three or four, when that contract's up, was he really worth a first-round draft pick on production? here we go again. You know, year two and three, he might be doing good. But when you needed him the first year, when you could have that playoff, you know, push or maybe Super Bowl push, he was a situational type of guy that's not on the field for a high number of snaps. So these are the type of things you got to project when you're going to pick somebody that high. Now a guy, two guys, one guy I really want you to comment on, Jason. And I'm going to tell you, man, either I'm going to hit it boom or bust on this guy. I got him rated my number one outside linebacker, and that's Michael Buchanan out of Illinois. Now, I've looked at this game on game film, and I'm going to tell you, man, this guy is a beast. He's a beast.
Well, guys, we're about out of time, but Jason, what are your thoughts on him?
The thing I love about Buchanan is somebody's going to get him, and they're going to get him a lot later than they should. He doesn't fall in line with his perceived expectation, but you watch him on film, you watch him in the combine, he did really well in the drills. He's the kind of guy that don't be surprised if 3 years from now he's a household name and you don't know who he is today.
Right.
Well, In a draft with very little great at the top and a lot of good after that, it's funny because I see a couple guys, I guess we'll just go full circle, at the running back position who kind of exemplify that. A year ago, I would have thought Monty Ball, not just Lattimore if healthy, but DeAndre Ellington, Niall Davis, those are some guys I thought might have gone in the first round. None of them will sniff it. And I guess that they're sort of like the poster children for this draft this year. Teams are going to have to get lucky with those guys, draft well in the mid-rounds, and hope those guys turn out well. Guys, going to be looking forward to doing a wrap-up show with you guys after the event is over and seeing what your grades are and seeing who you thought the winners and the losers were. Thank you both very much for joining us today.
Hey, anytime. And Jason, keep it up out there, man.
Look forward to next Thursday and Friday and Saturday.
And we'll be here to wrap it up. up with you all afterwards. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us here today. FDH Lounge, mini episode number 265.